solid. My defense is impregnable, and I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat your children.
He will be mine in round nine. And if it makes me sore, I'll cut it to four.
Thank you very much.
And if that don't do, we'll get him in two. If he run, we'll get him in one.
Hello, welcome back to the V2 Boxing Podcast. Joining me tonight is Damien. Good evening, pal.
Good evening.
Apologies to our listeners for the long break that we've been on. Not an awful lot we could do about it, really. A few things away from the side, but we're back, and we're back ahead of a massive weekend for British boxing, as finally Kell Brook is going to get that world title shot. It's a decent card over in the States as well. But, I mean, let's have a look at that, the Kell Brook fight first of all, mate. Sean Porter's coming off the back of, two career best wins. Demolished, the ever durable Malignaggi in his last fight as well, whereas Kell Brook hasn't fought anyone near this level. So, talk me through how you see the fight going.
I don't know. I keep changing my stance on it. It's definitely as 50-50 as it gets, it's just right down the line. I can make a case for Porter all day long, and I can make a case for Brook all day long, but at the minute I'm just going to go with, Porter on points. I can't see Brook getting stopped. The beating he took off Carson Jones in that first fight, and with Porter as well, I think that that one against Malignaggi might have flattered him a bit. Okay, people are sort of thinking, Malignaggi's durable, but he's been about a while, and Porter just sort of done what a lot of fighters, Haddon and Khan did, and that's just run straight for him. And I think before that, against Devin Alexander, if he's able to, handle Devin Alexander, I would have actually picked Alexander to beat Brook too. Mm-hmm. And I just, for some reason, just feel that, it'll be close, nip and tuck. I'm not saying he'd run away with it, but, I just feel that the fact that it's out in the States, the whole Devin Alexander win, whenever Porter beat Alexander, sort of looking back on that, I'm not really looking at the Malignaggi fight at all. I think that was just sort of, he caught him at the right time. I think he's just going to go ahead and get on points, and considering it's in the US as well, I don't know, I just think Porter will pick up his first loss.
Yeah, I can see what you mean. I mean, I'm looking at sort of the run of opponents that Porter has had, and you go back maybe July 2012, he fought Alfonso Gomez. All right, he's not a known fighter, but it was for the WBO title, so one of those small trinkets, but still, 23-5-2 isn't a bad record for a guy coming up in the States. I mean, that's the equivalent of some of the journeyman we see over here. And then he fought Julio Diaz, which was a draw. And what he told me when I interviewed him was his toughest fight of his career. Funny, because we interviewed him after Khan had beat Diaz, and people slated Amir Khan, and I kept saying to people, well, hang on a minute, this guy's telling us that Diaz was his toughest fight of his career, and we interviewed him after he'd beaten Alexander. So, obviously that says an awful lot. And then after Diaz, he fought Phil LoGreco, 25-0 at the time, and he beat him on UD. Then he beat Diaz, unanimous decision as well.
Yeah.
Alexander and Malignaggi. So, he's had a tough run of opponents.
He just seems to be getting better too, if you look back on the Julio Diaz fight, where he struggled in that, but ever since then he's sort of really come out of his, he's come out of his shell, and he does seem to be, sort of a better fighter now in his last run of fights. He's really, especially, I know it says that I didn't pay much heed to the Paulie Malignaggi win, but it was impressive all the same. Mm-hmm. So you have to give him credit for that. Yeah. But when it comes to Brook, Brook's completely different. So I'm just trying to sort of match the styles. But if I was to match styles, it would sort of match Devin Alexander's a bit more towards Brook's.
Yeah.
And the fact that Porter was able to deal with that, it sort of gives me sort of the reason that he'll be able to deal with Brook. But as I said, I wouldn't be surprised either if Brook, sort of done the same, but I definitely think it's going to be points. It's going to go all the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to check out the list of opponents Kell Brook's faced in the same time. So July 2012, Carson Jones, majority decision, which, to be fair, I think people saw that, either a draw or it was a win for Jones. you know, that fight was, it could have gone either way. So, you know, you can't really complain. Then he fought.
They should have had that for a round for Brooke. Yeah. I would have argued.
Hector David Saldivia. I think this is the guy that Cal Brooks, he stopped with a jab.
Yeah,
I've seen a video of it recently as well. And, you know, that just looked dodgy. Not saying it was, but you don't get stopped by a jab, really. Then he stopped Carson Jones in 8. Then he stopped Senchenko. And his last fight was against Alvaro Robles. So, you know, Senchenko's the best name out there. That's the standout name, isn't it? Because of the hat and win. But he's, you know, no great shakes. Malinaji beat him. So, you know, he's not. He's not
that's style as well, you know, sort of the upright style. And, you know, it's not really. It's sort of what I was saying as well, just about sort of matching styles. It's nothing really, you know, the Shinchenko win may be the best on Brooks' record, but it's Shinchenko's no, you know, Sean Porter.
Yeah, exactly. The other question, whenever you think about Cal Brook, or whenever you talk about him, certainly on our forum anyway, is about his stamina, because it's only really happened in one fight where he's completely emptied the tank, and that was Carson Jones. Now, you would think Sean Porter is going to go at Cal Brook and try and empty that tank early on. Do you think that he's, you know, fix those problems? Because in every interview before every fight will tell you, I'm the best, you know, whoever, use Cal Brook, I'm the best Cal Brook. You're going to see the best Cal Brook on the night. You know, I fixed this, I fixed that, my diet's right, training camp's gone well. Nobody ever comes out and says, yeah, I've had a really crap training cramp, I haven't made weight properly. You know, so do you think he's fixed those problems, or do you think it's more, you know, a bit more bullshit from Cal Brook?
No, but I would like to believe so, because I think that night, you know, it was a big wake-up call for him, you know, and before that he was, you know, getting it so easy with, whenever he was with Frank Warren, and, you know, he was doing all these opponents in sort of all these no-names, and so in a second. And, you know, I think it was a good check. I know that he came into the other fight and, you know, he came in as a light middleweight. You know, for one of his fights, he didn't bother making the 147 limit, so that sort of raised a wee bit of suspicion. But, you know, I think for this fight, you know, he will have his head screwed on. You know, it is the big one. I think the whole scenario with Alexander and him backing out twice, you know, sort of made him a bit of a laughing stock. So, you know, I think with this, you know, he's going to be ready for it. You know, he has to be, because, you know, if he blows this, you know, it'll be the end of him.
Yeah. You have to think that this, it's your biggest fight of your career. Every, you know, when you lace up those gloves, as, you know, however young you start, you want to win that world title. So if he isn't switched on for this fight, then maybe it's time to look at another career, because there's something seriously wrong. Because as far as we're aware, there are no issues outside the ring. Let's have a look at the undercard, because obviously we haven't been on for since the middle of June. So it's been 2 months since our last show. And a lot has happened since then. And I will come on to something once we've finished talking about this show from the StubHub Centre. On the undercard then, Saki Obika against Anthony Doral, of a rematch of their fight from earlier this year. I had Doral winning the first fight. However, he did seem to stop fighting, I think, after about 7 rounds, and just seemed to let Beaker back in the fight. How do you see it going? Because obviously the winner potentially could be a George Groves opponent.
I sort of agree with what you said there, but you know, I think, just trying to, again, it's just one of those fights, you know, that the first fight was, you know, just sort of the fact that Beaker didn't start fighting for the first 7 rounds. Leaning my head towards Anthony Doral, you know, with this, I think, you know, there's a few mistakes that were made in that fight, you know, but I'm not too, it's just the fact that that there is, you know, these kind of, the fights that are on the card, and it's good to see, but, you know, it's to the main event and the co-feature, you know, are just for me 50-50s, and, you know, I've just been sitting sort of all week, just, you know, trying to go over it in my head, and there's a guy I sort of argue with on Facebook, and sort of, I don't know, a bit undecided, but once it comes to Saturday night, I'll have a proper sit down. At the minute, I'm leaning for Anthony Doral. I have a feeling that he's going to stop Beaker, but again, you know, I think it's one of those fights that, you know, we'd be surprised if, you know, Beaker come back and, you know, he'll get the victory on that one too.
See, I can see the referee having a big say in this fight, because there were lots of talk after the first one about how dirty Beaker fought and how he did this and how he did that. And I just think that it's in the States and, you know, it's an American fighting. Fair enough, I haven't got a problem with that. But I just have this feeling every time they get close, the referee is going to be on Beaker's case. Don't do that. Don't do this. Let him go. I can see, I don't think there'll be a disqualification, but I can see the referee having a similar performance to the Rios fight, which we'll talk about later on. Which, you know, I'll give my thoughts on that later. But I can see it being similar to that, where there's maybe points deducted, and there's going to be a little bit of play acting on the part of Anthony Durrell, who, you know, his brother Andre isn't against doing a bit of play acting every now and again, as we all know. So maybe it runs in the family. So we'll see. I like Andre Durrell, in case anybody gets offended by that. It's not really a standout fight, this. I'm really sorry, but we have to talk about it because he's, you know, a friend of the show. We've interviewed him in the past, and we'll hopefully have him on again in the future. But Deontay Wilder is fighting against Jason Gavin. Now, Jason Gavin is 37 years of age. He hasn't fought since November, when he won a majority decision against James Toney in Prize Fighter. His record is 25-16-4, with 11 stoppages. He's been stopped 7 times, and he has that massive knockout record percentage of 24.44%. So, obviously it's a safe fight, isn't it? Because Deontay Wilder's on the cusp of a world title against Stavern. But, you know, still, you want to see him actually go in with somebody with a pulse. I think everybody got a bit excited when he fought Malik Scott, because at the time, Scott was, he'd only had the one defeat to Chisora.
That was a controversy in itself.
Yeah, but then since then, everybody's been saying that fight was fixed as well. But that's a different story. I mean, I've just asked this on Twitter, so, but do you think Deontay Wilder will ever claim a world title?
Really is deadly to say, because sort of like David Price, you know, he hasn't really stepped it up. Yeah, I know we can say, you know, against Malik Scott that, you know, it was a bit of a, you know, step up. But then again, you know, Malik Scott, you know, his record sort of flattered itself too at the same time. So, and then against Chisora, you know, he sort of, you know, he went down, and did he raise at 9? Did he raise at 10? You know, but it's just, for me, Wilder, you know, he's got the punch that can do it. You know, he's obviously proved that, you know, because he's knocked everybody out. But against Stavern, you know, it's a complete different kettle of fish. So, you know, we'll see whenever he steps up that way. You know, it's just, for me, he's just a David Price that has a longer record at the minute. And we're never going to find out until he actually does go in the ring with Stavern. But, you know, at least he has the punch. You know, same as David Price, you know, he was long, massive, you know, he had that explosive punch to knock people out in the first one or two rounds, and Wilder has the same. But once he comes in against someone that's, you know, a bit more technical, and someone who has a decent chin, someone who can, you know, isn't going to fall over in the first couple of rounds, then it'll really show his mettle. But I think that at the minute, you know, fighting this guy that he's fighting at the weekend, you know, that's not really going to tell us anything. You know, that's just a showcase fight, just to put him on, to get his name out there one last time. But, you know, for me, it would be nice to see him win it. You know, I hope he does come good, you know, because he does have the exciting style, and, you know, he does have the explosive punch and the heavyweight division. That's exactly what you want to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. Obviously, I don't think this fight will go out of the first round, but, you know, you never know. Gavin might land a punch and it might be all over. The other names on the card, Luke Campbell and Callum Smith, are also out there fighting 6-rounders. And Jason Quigley is making his middleweight debut against TBA at the moment. Oh, sorry, he's had one fight, hasn't he? So, you know, interesting to keep an eye out for him. He was only out last month, so he's obviously keeping busy. Mentioned before that we want to talk about a few things. Now, we're hoping to, we've agreed it with MGM Marbella. We're going to head out there in February to go out and have a look at the gym. We just want to send our best wishes, really, to Jamie Moore, who sadly, you know, suffered a gunshot, two gunshot wounds out there last week, I think, or the week before. you know, hasn't put us off going out there. We've bought some Kevlar and stuff and a few pieces of body armour. But, you know, we're really looking forward to going out there, and we're going to try and do a live show there and get some interviews for you guys as well. So, you know, keep your ear to the ground with that one, and follow us on Twitter. Right, let's have a quick look at the Rios fight then. What did you make of that?
I was just joke refereeing, you know. The two of them, it was all set for a, you know, for a great fight. You know, it was one of those phone booth fights. The two of them were just getting tore into each other. Mm-hmm. But Vic Draculich, he's just awful, you know. He just kept getting in the way, stabbing. Some of those point deductions were just ridiculous too. And, you know, he just ruined what was looking to be a classic.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. And I think, you know, the two of them should be allowed to go back in against each other again. You know, I think it would be a shame if they didn't. You know, I think Rios and... you know, you would even give props, because Rios loves those kind of fights. You know, they're the ones that he sits down in his corner between rounds and he has a smile on his face. You know, he loves being on turnips like that. And just the fact that the referee just took all that away from everybody just by jumping in. And it was just... and the fact that I even stayed up to watch it, you know, it's just sort of pissed you off a wee bit. The fact that, you know, that you just have it. It's like whenever someone tells you that Joe Cortez is going to be the referee, you know, you just sort of sigh and just think, oh, God, this fight could just get ruined. But... as I said, it did. But the fact that it even, we've seen what we did see, you know, maybe we'll lean the more fans to call for, you know, a rematch and just get a different referee in there. Maybe Joe Smugger, or Steve Smugger, sorry, or Kenny Bayless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those two will just stand back and just let the two of them just tear each other up.
Yeah, it was a bit damn. I mean, I didn't have a problem with the first 2 point deductions, the first Chavez and the Rios one. I didn't have a problem with those. I thought they were a bit... you know, I can understand that, fair enough. But I think when you give a point deduction so early in the round, I mean, round 3 was Chavez's point deduction for holding. That is very early. You do sort of leave yourself open to having to make a decision like this. It probably could have been deducted, you know, a point maybe, or even been disqualified for the WWE-style move he pulled before it.
Yeah.
But when the disqualification came, he didn't look to be doing anything. I thought Rios had hold of his arm more than the other way.
For me, it sort of even just took me about 5 minutes just to realise that the fight was even called off. Yeah. Sort of like, you know, what's happening here? You know, that couldn't be the end of the fight. And...
Yeah, it's a bit stupid, wasn't it? I mean, what next for Brandon Rios, though? Because there must be... he was losing that fight, in my opinion. I mean, the judges had it 75, 74, 74, 75, and 74, 75. So they had a lot closer, but I had him losing, I think, a couple of rounds. Do you have any concerns for Rios at the weight? I mean, he's not really a welterweight, is he?
No, I see. That fight was a welter, wasn't it?
Yeah.
See, the fact was, you know, he was able to impose his size on people at lightweight, but he just seems to be at a welterweight. And, you know, against Pacquiao, he just doesn't have the power, because he's coming up against fellas that are, you know, roughly the same size as him, and
mm-hmm.
you know, sort of like the Adrian Broner as well. You know, he went up and sort of found out that he couldn't even, you know, knock over Paulie Malignaggi, or couldn't make it down.
Oh, Damien's just put me on hold there. So yeah, I think what he was trying to say is that Paulie Malignaggi, he couldn't put a dent in any of them, and I think if he was to fight someone like Paulie Malignaggi or anyone like that, then, you know, he'd really struggle. I don't think he'd actually struggle with Paulie. I think Damien might have got a bit confused there. I'm sure he'll take me off hold in a second. Don't you just love live shows? Other news in the boxing world then recently is that apparently Andre Ward and Mikhail Kessler are going to have a rematch. I'm not sure it's a fight that many people want to see. If anybody wants to... you know, change our minds, they can email us at paulh@v2journal.com, and we'll see where we go from there. So let's see if we can get Damien back on the line here. Yeah, Damien's back. Hello. Now, so...
sorry, I can knock off her.
No,
so basically just a cut of the point that was making that at 147, he hasn't got the power. Basically, I think he needs to maybe go down to late welter. He maybe make a bit of a dent down there. But even at that, you know, you've got the likes of sort of Matisse and, you know, people like that down there. So I think at lightweight, you know, and I suppose it's kind of one as well that it's a bit unfair on the other lightweights when you've got someone so big that's able to to get down to that weight. So, yeah, you know, if he's not able to make lightweight, it's going to have to be light welter, just even to test it out, because, mm-hmm, you know, it's welterweight. He's just, you know, he's not able to make, put a dent in anybody.
Yeah, no, that I completely agree. Completely agree. Now, while you put me on hold, I was just saying to the listeners on Mixlr and obviously and listeners to the podcast that the news coming out of America and Denmark is that Mikael Kessler and Andre Ward are apparently set to have a rematch. Now,
right,
it doesn't make a lot of sense, this fight, because, you know, everybody says, oh yeah, all right, Andre Ward headbutted him and Andre Ward did this, and Kessler would have won, someone said to me once. Kessler would have won had Andre Ward not used his head.
No.
No, not a chance. I mean, is there any point in this rematch for you?
Well, for me, there's no point in Andre Ward having a rematch with anybody, you know, at the end of the day, because everyone he's beaten decisively. So, just the point with Kessler as well, you know, looking back at his last fight with Fratz, you know, he showed that, although he did put up a, you know, he put up a good fight with Fratz, you know, I think their two styles gel well, but against a technical boxer like Ward, you know, he's just walking into another loss. Can't really see where the demand is for his fight or the money. So, you know, for Andre Ward, it's sort of just sort of like a comeback fight, because it just seems like he's never going to fight. So at least he'll have a bit of a name. I think for him, that's probably the reason he's fighting Kessler. But, you know, it's with Mikael Kessler, you know what you're getting. And, you know, I don't know. It's just, I agree with you that it is a pointless fight. But, you know, for Andre Ward, he's got that much ring rust on him now. You know, he has to come out and, you know, he's at the top so high, he has to fight someone that's recognised. You know, nobody would, you know, take anything sort of less than, you know, even a shot Mikael Kessler.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think for Andre Ward, it's good in the commercial sense. I think that's about it.
Yeah, I...
Well, not sort of commercial sense, but just, you know, for the... Just sort of for the you know, get the name on the record, because at the minute, even around that division, there isn't really anybody else for him.
Yeah. No, I completely understand where you're coming from. And Sam, thanks for tuning in, mate. You said this would be a decent fight, but one that Ward will win comfortably. So thanks for tuning in, Sam. Just for our listeners as well, if you don't know who Sam is, I can never pronounce your surname, mate, so I apologise. You can find him on Twitter. His Twitter's called Sam Boxing Haven. He's one of the best boxing journalists out there at the moment. Writes a lot for GiveMeSport.com and Top Class Boxing as well, you know, for friends of the show and friends of the site. So thanks very much for tuning in, pal. It is one for you, mate, a fantasy fight. And it's one that Carl Froch has chucked out.
Right.
It's one I want to see. Gennady Golovkin against Carl Froch. Here's why.
We were on Twitter the other day. Yeah.
Let me explain, because Gennady Golovkin hits harder than George Groves.
Yeah.
And George Groves isn't a massive super middleweight. He's not. And I actually think Gennady Golovkin has the power, he has the style and the power to carry it up through the weights. And I personally then see him troubling Carl Froch if he lands cleanly. And he will land cleanly, because Carl Froch only knows one way of fighting, and that's to walk forward with his hands down, stick his chin in the air and say, hit it. And eventually, Carl Froch's chin will break. And I want to see it purely because I want to see how Lee Froch reacts.
Yeah.
I think he'll cry. but, you know, I think that's a cracking fight, because it's two guys who do go toe-to-toe. But it also gives an idea how Gennady Golovkin will box on the back foot, because he'll be forced backwards by the bigger man.
Yeah, but it's, even the fact, you know, it's Golovkin's not exactly, you know, a massive middleweight either.
No.
So, you know, sort of looking at that aspect. But Fats does have whenever he fought against Abraham, you know, he does have a very good jab as well. So, you know, but will he be able to keep Golovkin off him? You know, because Golovkin also showed against Gale, even in those, you know, short fight that they had, you know, that he was easy to hit at times as well. And, you know, as Froch showed against George Groves, although people called Groves chinny, you know, but, you know, he still took some massive blows even in the first fight as well, that Froch still has, some pop on his punch too. So,
yeah.
You know, it definitely is an interesting one.
Yeah, it's interesting because Golovkin's one of those guys that you want to see and get hit back. Now, James Kirkland would be a good fight for Golovkin.
Yeah.
Because Kirkland is a very explosive fighter, especially early on. You know, he's very vulnerable early on. That's the other thing.
Yeah, so, well, against Cheetah, he had the knockout ratio like Pauly Malnazi.
Yeah.
We actually would have flattered Pauly Malnazi, Cheetah's knockout ratio, but the fact that he was so vulnerable in that first round, where he was put over three times, would just make me think that Golovkin would probably just blow him out after about maybe two or three.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. Sam's just said Golovkin Frotch should be such a good fight, but can't see it happening. It's a great fight for the fans with such a superb mix of styles.
Yeah, because there was actually, whenever we were on Twitter, it was a few weeks back, it was just after Golovkin and Gill, and Eddie Hearn says he was going to sort of reply to people's tweets, and whenever we were putting out about the Golovkin Frotch, he says no, because it's not HBO pay-per-view. So some people, whenever we asked him, well, and who would be, he mentioned Chavez Jr. And then I raised the point, because I know that after Frotch and Groves, they said that they were going to have a Miguel Kessler 3 fight.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I put that back to Eddie Hearn about, you know, well, sure, Frotch and Kessler wouldn't be HBO pay-per-view, and all of a sudden the reply stopped. So, you know, I think that at the minute, I agree with Sam there. I don't think that fight will ever happen, the Golovkin one.
No, that's the reason we're not getting press passes anymore either. It's because of you. No, I'm only joking. would Chavez be pay-per-view, though, do you think? But is Carl Froch pay-per-view in America? I don't think he has a big enough following in the States. He's only fought there, once or twice?
Because whenever I say this, the Eddie Hearn, so you were going to ride on the coattails of Chavez Jr., and he says, well, we'll ride on the coattails of anyone that pays, you know, if it pays more money. So I think that they're sort of basing the, you know, round about that weight, they could probably, Bob Arum could probably sell Chavez Jr. to the Mexicans and put it on pay-per-view, you know, after, because Frats and Groves was on HBO. You know, I think Frats is pretty well known over there, but if they throw him in against Chavez Jr., you know, they could build this against, you know, two massive punchers, blah, 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 and they could sell it. But as we've seen, the pay-per-view numbers for, you know, a lot of, whenever two foreigners are fighting in America, you know, haven't been great, you know, with Cotto and Martinez especially. So I don't think it would do, you know, great numbers in America anyway, but at least Frats can tell people that he's an international superstar that's fought in the HBO pay-per-view.
Well, he is an international superstar, and his brother's his brother's just an international Burke.
Yeah, he's actually an international gymnast now. I don't know if you've seen that program on Saturday night.
I saw the clip on Facebook, and I was just like, really? What was he said about Kazaki? I'll never do something like Strictly Come Dancing. I'm too famous or something. Or I don't.
Carla Contradiction Frats, I think I started calling him after that. Then he was on, I think it was Let's Dance, it was called.
Yeah, wasn't that with his missus? Yeah, dear.
Oh, that was that
lovely. Yeah, his missus must have promised him something quite nice.
Probably shut up during the fight.
Right, I mean, let's have a quick... what should we talk about next? Because we haven't really got a set, sort of, you know, running order this week, because it's only the two of us on.
I think maybe Frankie Gavin.
Yeah, Frankie Gary obviously suffered his first loss, didn't he, to Bundu. Now, everybody wrote Bundu off before the fight because Frankie Gavin is this great talent. Frankie Gavin, to me, don't get me wrong, is a very nice guy. He comes across really well in interviews. But, and I said it to you after the fight, he's lazy. And he's lazy because he could get down to light welterweight if he wanted.
Yeah.
But he chooses to fight welterweight. He's too small, and he doesn't have the power for the weight.
And it wasn't even that. It was just on the inside. I just think he was just completely exposed. You know, Bundu pushed him against the ropes, and Gavin just couldn't do anything fighting on the ropes. You know, it was, you know, at times you were just sort of just waiting on getting stabbed. You know, you could even see the referee just ready to jump in and stab him. You know, with Bundu, you know, for 39 years old, you know, he's just come out of nowhere. You know, after the Lee Purdy fight, and you know, it's. It'll be good to see him getting the world title shot, hopefully, especially in that division. So, I thought Gavin was a wee bit unsportsmanlike, jumping out of the ring there as well. So,
yeah, he went and apologised afterwards, didn't he? He went into the ring and into the dressing rooms and said, "You know, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done it." Which, you know, you can't really complain about, I suppose. He did it. Now, here's a question: you mentioned him getting a world title shot there. Who's he going to fight for a world title? Because you've got Floyd Mayweather Jr. is the WBA and WBC. There's not a chance in hell Floyd Mayweather Jr. will fight Bundu because he isn't a known name. He won't sell. Pacquiao is the WBO. Again,
yeah.
Bob Arum, he isn't going to sell. possibly, you know, if Sean Porter comes through or Cal Brook beats Sean Porter, that might be the route for them to go.
Be a new champion. I'd say so, but I think, you know, there's going to be big demand for the Porter and Brook and Khan. You know, but whether, you know, and I actually think that Amir Khan will go for that, but not too sure about Eddie Hearn. You know, I know that they say that they do want it, but, you know, he also said that he actually says a lot of things, Eddie Hearn, so so we'll see whether that comes down to it. But, yeah, I suppose you look at Porter, that's probably the easiest route you can go.
Yeah. Here's one for you. I might chuck one doing with, and I think you get beat because I'm very, very high on this guy. Keith Thurman. He's the interim WBA, so it would guarantee Bundu a shot at the big money fight. Or, you know, he'd have to eventually, I suppose.
Yeah, sure. I think by the time he goes down that route, you know, even if he was to beat Thurman, he'd be in his 40s. And, you know, whether, you know, he's, as you said yourself, he's a bit of an onion. And plus, Thurman would just wipe him out anyway.
Sam's just said Gavin's a very good technical boxer, but he does lack the power to keep the top guys off him. It's a very good fight. Bundo is very impressive and deserves a big fight. I'll tell you what, Sam, next week we'll just have you on the show, mate, because you're contributing more than both of us.
it just reminded me of sort of slightly the Peterson and Khan, just whenever they fought in the ropes, you know, whenever Khan couldn't get Peterson off him. That's exactly what it reminded me of.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, mate. I think Khan's learned since then as well. But I don't think, because Gavin's with his amateur trainer, isn't he? You do have to question when an amateur trainer who trains no other professional boxers steps to train a pro, whether it's going to work. And I think that doesn't help. That he needs someone maybe like a Brendan Ingle.
Yeah.
You know, someone who's been around, trained world champions and trained them for a long time, rather than having both him, you know, both Frankie Gavin and the trainer sort of learning the pro game at the same time, because that is an impossible situation, and that is, you know, really always destined to fail. Here's a name for you, and this happened while we went on that. Chris Algieri. How highly? Okay. I mean, how?
Personally, I thought I'd get beat back in Vodnikov by a couple of rounds, but I don't know. Just see, for me, you know, he was just a bit too easy to catch. You know, a lot of times he was, you know, Pendy just seemed to have a, you know, the jab was the key to that fight. If he made a case for him beating Provodnikov, but, you know, I just think that's just going to be a disaster in sales for Pacquiao. You know, I just think, you know, technically he hasn't really fought anybody of note, you know, apart from Provodnikov. And even in that fight, you know, I seen that as a loss when he stepped up, although he was given the decision. You know, he's got a good background story and he was in his own backyard, but Pacquiao's going to smash him a bit.
Okay, you say he hasn't fought anyone of note, and he hasn't got knockout power, has he? You know, 8 knockouts. And to be fair, you look at his record, you know, they are all, it's a rookie's record, really, isn't it? You look at the guys he's fighting, and they are guys you fight on your way up. However, I mean, you mentioned him being, you know, easy to catch. That could be put down to the fact he couldn't see out of one eye. Potentially, you know, it's hard enough, I suppose, with two eyes. You take one of those out of the equation, then it's going to be difficult. I think for me that fight exposed just how, you know, one-dimensional Provodnikov is, and I'm a very big fan of Provodnikov. You know, it's exciting to watch, and everybody who follows boxing or any you know, one of the fight games, UFC, MMA, whatever, they always like a guy who just goes forward, wings punches or whatever they do, and tries to knock the other guy out. But, you know, Chris, Sam's just made a point there that this is a big fight and it's a money fight for Algeria as well.
Yeah.
Because he'd probably get beaten by most, you know, of the light welterweight champions.
The fact is, he's moving up to welterweight. He won that title at light welter, and he's moving up to welterweight. So, is this sort of going to be like a Peterson scenario where he's still going to be a world champion even if he loses, or is he giving that belt up?
I don't know. Yeah. That's my honest answer. I don't know, because there was rumours about Pacquiao.
If it is, then it's not a bad way just to, you know, cash in on it, because then he can just drop back down the late welter where he's, you know, he's got his title and just sort of cherry pick from there, really, if he wants to, you know, maybe take on make a bit of cash, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
it really depends on that scenario. Mm.
The other one I'm going to give a shout out to as well is Mauricio Herrera, who we interviewed earlier this year.
Yeah,
great news, he got his interim championship. You know, hopefully he'll get that fight with Jesse Vargas as well now, because, you know, really nice guy, Mauricio, and he's always got time. If you drop him a message on Facebook, he's a top bloke, and really just, you know, take the time really to answer you, and he's always willing to give an interview as well. All right, mate, what about Carl Frampton? Because you're not going to this fight, you're working.
No, I don't know. I'm going to see. I'll see if the if the fight does get the press pass, I'll more than likely take it. Because, you know, for it over here, it's going to be a massive event. Like, and I'd be ashamed to miss it, you know, just for sitting behind having people drunkards shouting at you, working in a bar. So, you know, I was actually supposed to message you that during, I actually thought I had already, saying just to go on ahead with it. But if the opportunities are to report at that fight, I would take it in a heartbeat now. Because there's actually a mate of mine, he's probably listening now, Simon. And he sat and debated with me all day Saturday about, I don't know, he seems to have a being spanner about that he thinks Martinez is going to slaughter him. And I was sort of like just trying to, we were sort of both stating our cases, and it sort of was getting a bit funny. But plus, there's a lot of those Irish websites as well, and people are, you know, seem to forget that that fight was maybe about a round in it up until the knockout as well. You know, it was a close fight, so, you know, I can sort of see the points of view. So it's definitely not a given. You know, a lot of people think that, you know, he's just going to walk through Martinez. You know, it's just going to be a sort of an easy fight, an easy belt. But, you know, as Martinez shows, he's not easy to beat. You know, even whenever Frampton did beat him, it was only by, you know, a sort of a punch on the back foot, just caught him once. But going into that, you know, he's only a bit of round up. I'm not too sure what the official scorecards were at the time. I don't think they give them out. But, you know, it was definitely nip and tuck up to that.
Yeah, I was impressed with how Frampton boxed in that fight, because it showed a different dimension to his game, didn't it? That was the thing.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, they never gave the results out, and well, certainly not on Box Rack anyway.
I think the whole point of being able to knock somebody out on the back foot in so late in a fight, you know, just shows that, you know, that you've got, if you're able to do that, then, you know, you're laughing.
Yeah, well, you know, there's not many boxers who can do it, because you don't have the chance to plant your feet when you're going backwards, do you? That's the big thing. And also, you're not measuring the distance, really, because you don't know if that guy's just going to jump or, you know. But certainly it'd be a good one. You know, I might try and get over for that one. Fancy getting me a shift in the bar?
I probably, yeah. Although you probably wouldn't want to work in a bar over here.
No, I don't want to work in a bar over here.
Good thought.
There's the news coming out of Amir Khan. You wrote an article about what next for Amir Khan last week that went on our site. Now, Amir Khan today has said that either Devin Alexander and Robert Guerrero are both in talks for a fight in either November or December with him. Are you happy with those opponents, first of all?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah?
I think that's what he needs. Yeah, especially, I think that, you know, they're good technical fighters as well, and I think that's what he needs. You know, there's no point in getting him against another Collazo, who, you know, all credit to Collazo, you know, but he is limited, and, you know, he does have a good punch on him, but, you know, he needs someone that's, you know, not finished, you know, not a shot fighter. He can't go in just against someone that's a name. He needs to go in and really prove himself. You know, and as he's shown in the past that he's more than willing to do it. But, you know, if he does take one of them too, then I say fair play to him, because, you know, there are two fights that he definitely could lose in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think fighting Guerrero is probably a tougher ass than Alexander. Because you know Guerrero will turn up every time.
Yeah.
You don't always know that Alexander is going to turn up. That is the only thing about that, really. But they're both tough fights at the end of the day, aren't they?
You know? It's the same with Alexander, though. You know, the way he was beat by Bradley, you know, he pushed it on him and then Porter done the same, you know. But sort of looking at it, you know, Khan can't really, you know, he hasn't really got that, you know, strength, you know, to push people. He's good in the centre of the ring, you know, where he can keep it at range. But with Bradley and Porter, you know, they just went to put their head into Alexander's chest and just sent him back. You know, but it's whether Khan can even do that. If he keeps it in the centre of the ring, then I just think it's up in the air. Who wins that fight too?
Well, Sam, he says he'd love to see the Guerrero fight. It's a dangerous fight for Khan, but if he can fight to a game plan like he did against Collazo, which he was, you know, superb. Took a couple of shots, but he was superb during that fight. Then Khan wins. Kind of agree with that. The fact in that fight that Khan was in and out, he used his speed superbly. You know, he never stayed in the pocket a second longer than he had to. That is the Amir Khan that we need to see. And we've said it, you know, you watch a fight of Amir Khan and you say, wow, you know, that was the best Amir Khan. And I was at the Kotelnik fight when he won the first world title. That was the best Amir Khan for me.
And yeah, so everything... even sort of just whenever you made a point there about Gavin Alexander, you don't know which one's going to turn up. Mm-hmm. So you flip that straight back around, yeah, Amir Khan too. You know, you just don't know which Khan's going to turn up either. So that's just sort of makes that one a bit intriguing because, you know, the two of them sort of can... sort of the Khan that turns up against, say, Peterson, although Peterson was cheating. But, you know, it just depends what Samir Khan turns up also.
Yeah. And I thought, yeah, I mean, I thought Khan won that fight. He wasn't at his best, but I thought he won.
No, I haven't won a
bit of hometown.
I won round.
Yeah, but a bit of hometown cooking in that one, I think. But, yeah, you know.
But the Hatman.
Yeah. Yeah, it's only like the Barrera fight, wasn't it? That was very hometown. I was at that one as well, and, you know, you could see from ringside that fight should have been stopped as soon as that cut happened. But, you know, it wasn't.
Well, they actually had a few bob on Amir Khan to win between rounds, what was it, between rounds 4 and 6. So I was happy.
Yeah, I remember that card because Enzo Macronelli was fighting Ola Rafalabi on it. And he got wiped out after about, I think he was, might be mid-round, 6 rounds. And for the first five or first couple of rounds, Enzo poured it on. He had him against the ropes at every second of the round and was unloading, but never landed one clean shot. And Afolabi landed one punch, and that was it. It was all over. And Bradley Price, who I interviewed for the site last month, he was on the undercard as well, and he got knocked down. And I met them both before as well. Maybe I'm just really bad luck. You shouldn't go to
it. Is there any boxes? Boxing podcast.
Maybe you should just not meet any fighters ever.
We'll just burn into 7 fires since you walked through the door.
Yeah. No, he's not coming in. Get rid of that bloody chair. I mean, there's obviously, you know, big news always around the world of boxing. What else do you want to talk about tonight, mate? This is really our first show back. We've not really got anything planned. So, what's on your mind at the moment?
Well, I think we all know what the big topic is. It's like the elephant in the room. I just don't want to say it about the news that came out of the weekend.
No, go on. I'm letting you say it.
About that stunner that we all, the picture, that's a gorgeous loving woman that we all seen coming out on Sunday. No, but all fair dues, Dave. Like, it's, I met him at the King's Hall whenever Martin Lindsay fought John Simpson, and he was decent enough. You know, he wasn't ringside. He was actually walking around the fans who were outside of the ringside. And that's where he was sitting, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've got nothing but respect for Frank. You know, he's done...
From outside the ring. He was actually just walking around the fans, just chatting away to people.
Yeah. I mean, I've got nothing but respect for Frank. He's done a lot for the site, actually, when we first got set up. Adam interviewed him a couple of times, and we had him on the podcast. And, you know, very, very nice guy. I remember the last time we interviewed him, he was actually sat in a pub having a family meal. And we rang him up and he walked away from the table and sat on his own and gave us a 5-minute interview. And you could hear the waitresses coming up to him and asking for his order.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was a really nice guy. And as you say, you know, must have taken so much courage. And to see the amount of jokes that are being made and comments about him is quite, you know, disappointing. You know, we're meant to live in a tolerant society.
Yeah, and I think it's to be, you know, it's to be expected from, you know, just idiots like that anyway, but... So I was talking to my dad about it, and he was saying to him, you know, can you imagine if it had been a football manager had done that? Do you know what I mean? It would have been complete international uproar, but I think with most sort of boxing fans that have their heads screwed on, you know, they're just sort of paying for their dues, you know, if that's what he wants, that's what he wants, you know, just let him get on with things and just respect the man for it, but or the woman for it. But I think with, you know, if it had been any other sport, you know, well, football especially, I think most of those comments are probably from the casual fans, as you like to call them.
Yeah, well,
so I think most boxing fans that have sort of read on Twitter, you know, a lot of them just have been sort of, there's been a lot of good comments, you know, mostly.
Here's one for you. How many openly gay footballers still playing, do you know?
None.
Right. Orlando Cruz, openly gay boxer.
That's just the one.
Yeah. That is so brave, really. Because, you know, at the end of the day, I know it sounds stupid, but boxing is a sport where he's in the ring with another bloke who's topless, they're up close. You know, there could be so many comments and jibes chucked at him. And, you know, he's taking so much guts to actually come out of the ring. And he doesn't hide it because he comes in all the pink outfits and stuff, doesn't he, as well?
Yeah, the pink outfits and stuff.
He's, you know, There's just people are too quick to judge, and they wouldn't say it to their face, but they'll say it behind a keyboard. I've seen it on Twitter. I've seen it on Facebook. Somebody actually commented on our Facebook page the other day. Let me just see if I can find it. I put the picture up. And I did. I put on the picture, you know, it wasn't a joke. I said, you know, wishing Frank all the best. Best of luck to Frank Maloney. And somebody said, who cares? So I just put, well, having interviewed him, you know, just wanted to wish him all the best. We are a boxing page, after all. And this is boxing
news.
I think
he was on TV today. I never seen
him. He was on this morning.
Yeah,
he was on this morning.
Yeah.
They do need to do something about his voice, though. It's still that, you know, little Frank Maloney voice. It's still quite funny. But, you know, fair play to the guy, and, you know, he deserves all the happiness. I'm sure his family are taking some time to get used to it. But saying that, you know, we're saying that people shouldn't judge. I've already seen jokes about Robin Williams.
Hello.
You know, that's just daft. Anyway, the reason I mentioned Robin Williams is because obviously he passed away, and there was that fantastic boxing scene in Popeye.
That's right.
I saw it on Facebook the other day, and I was like, I remember. I'm sure it's Butterbean in the other corner as well, from 1980. Fantastic film. One for the kids, not really for adults. Let's have a quick chat about Anthony Josh then, because obviously he was going to fight in Ireland, which we're going to try and send you to, and obviously with the Jamie Moore incident, that's been cancelled, and Anthony Joshua was added to the Manchester bill. Still no news on his opponent.
Is that the same? I haven't really heard much about it. I thought that we're just going to use the same guy who's fighting before, Gary Price fought.
No,
has that not been confirmed?
It's a TBA at the moment.
All right.
And Boxrec, and then Michael Sprott is down for October. Which, you know, I don't really understand him fighting Michael Sprott, to be honest, but, you know, I suppose he's another guy to get a bit of experience.
You say it was Joshua and Sprott?
Yeah.
I suppose the same as Joshua's last fight. Sprott's still in the British rankings, you know, if you look at the top 10. You know, he's building his way up to at least the domestic ranking. So, you know, if he gets past Sprott, I'm not too sure. Well, Sprott's in front of him anyway. I think Sprott's somewhere in the top 10. And I think he may be in front of Joshua at the minute, just about, you know, after Joshua's last fight. So, again, it's if people want to moan about it, you know, Joshua still has to claim rankings to get to where he wants to go to. And if he fights Sprott and becomes, you know, he'd probably become maybe third or fourth British ranked behind Cesaro and Fury. So he has to do what he has to do.
The only concern I have about him fighting Sprott is his last six fights have all been in a prize fighter tournament. He fought the one at York Hall, then he went out to New Zealand and lost. He was knocked out as the corner threw in the towel, but he was knocked out. Before that, though, he'd lost, you know, by TKO to Urquhart. He'd been fighting out in Switzerland and Europe, hadn't he, on the Sauerland shows.
Yeah.
There's just that concern that it's just going to be a blowout, but
yeah, you know, it'll just turn up.
Yeah, but you know, you never know, and you're completely right. The other news in the British heavyweights that we've obviously not talked about, with us not being, you know, recording shows, is Tyson Fury, Derek Chisora was cancelled. Derek Chisora pulled out with a fractured hand. They then flew in an opponent, and his name escapes me.
Usinov,
which, you know, was a massive ask. For Tyson to take at short notice. Then on the Saturday morning, the fight was called off because Huey Fury, who was Tyson's first trainer, was taken to hospital, or was in hospital, and suffered complications following an operation. We've not heard anything since. However, it did come out. I don't know how true this is. Or I saw it in the paper. Tyson Fury had had his wife Paris had had a miscarriage. So, you know, that fight was filled with problems
from the get-go.
And fair play, you know, Tyson got an awful lot of stick for pulling out of that fight, but when you read about all the stuff that had been going on in the build-up and that Tyson had dealt with and just ignored, he deserves so much credit, and you know, he gets such a bad reputation for the stunts he pulls, but he gets boxing in the news.
Yeah.
Not always for the right things, but people are talking about boxing, so it depends what you want. You either want people sat around a table and not fight, not being nasty and not getting boxing headlines, and then the sport will just become a very minority sport and not a lot of people know. And shows like ours and sites like ours and the other ones that we're friends with won't have any news to report.
Yeah.
Or you can have Tyson Fury doing what he does, making headlines, you know, causing problems.
Yeah, but it all just seemed so staged. You know, it was, you know,
well,
Tyson Fury gets on, you know, whenever he went over to fight Steve Cunningham, and he was sort of starting a bit of a ruckus over there. And but I think just with the, you know, the rumours about the ticket sales and things like that, and, you know, the whole thing then too at the press conference, and, you know, it just seemed a wee bit fake to me. You know, it was, I think after a while, I think it was the last press conference they did where they made a bet.
Yeah.
And it was just sort of cringing, you know, sort of going, come on, these two just come on the face when they week away. It's, you know, you could just tell that they were pushing, just trying to sell more tickets. You know, obviously, the as I said about the rumours, the ticket sales weren't great for it, I think. Frank Warren completely misjudged, you know, how big in demand that fight was. But maybe he's going to do it right this time, you know. But
yeah,
obviously, it's Tyson Fury. You just don't know what you want to get at these press conferences anyway, with him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the pulling out was staged at all. I don't think that Peter Fury would be involved in something like that.
Yeah, because I think I mentioned it too, you know, on Twitter that, you know, Tyson Fury, whenever he weighed in, you know, at the weigh-in, he actually looked in decent shape. And I was sort of thinking, because someone said to me, you know, I said, I'm fed up with Tyson Fury. That's me finished with him, you know, finished watching him. But, you know, I was sort of going back and saying, well, why would he go to all that trouble, you know, training and going to the weigh-in, only to cancel it, you know, the morning of the fight?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Seemed pointless.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. You know, they flew Ustinov in, happy to fight him. And to be honest, I think Fury would have beat Ustinov. Don't get me wrong, I just don't think, you know, I don't think a late step in, unless someone, you know, Fury really took his eye off the ball.
Yeah, but see, the thing was as well, you know, if there was ever a time to, you know, just for Fury, just not fight at all, it was whenever the news came out about Chisora's hand.
Yeah.
So I think that it had to be true, you know. I don't think there was any big conspiracy or, you know, the people putting on their tinfoil hats, you know, don't think they can really make a case for it, because it's just as doesn't make sense, you know, the fact that they went through all that and the way in, and I don't know, it just didn't make sense. So I think, you know, it was true.
No, there are people on, you know, and I'll use our site as an example, people on our site actually believed he pulled out, and that somebody actually said Huey's his cousin, not his uncle. And I thought, right, well, I'm sure that, you know, Huey is allowed to be the name of more than one person. So I went and I got a video and I posted it. And they said, yeah, maybe that's just a fake name. It's like, what? It's an interview. It's not a guy I just found on YouTube. It was Jane Couch interviewing him after one of his early fights.
Yeah.
And it was like, really? You're gonna tell me that Jane Couch is in on this big conspiracy that was set up years ago? It's like, how pathetic is that? you know, you do have to love some of the absolute garbage that that you read. Before we, you know, I think before we wrap up tonight, because there's not, as I say, that next week's show we'll have a running order and stuff, but this week's sort of a last minute, we're going to make a comeback. But how about Sergey Kovalev versus Bernard Hopkins? Can old Hopko, you know, roll that time again? Or
I'm actually worried about him in this fight. You know, this is going to be, you know, I know that sort of he's going by his alias, so, you know, the alien, but I think he's biting off, you know, far more than he can chew here. You know, I think maybe give it back in his heyday when he was in his prime, you know, he would have maybe beat Kovalev, but I think, you know, Kovalev, he's not just a puncher. You know, I actually think I would take Hopkins to beat Stevenson. You know, I think, but I think, you know, technical wise, Kovalev's just, you know, he's not somebody you can, you know, sort of just tie up and use your dirty tricks on. You know, I think he's, you know, as soon as he lands one of his punches, it's just going to be a good night, I think. And bringing in Hopkins' age, but then again, you know, he just can't take anything for granted. And many times we wrote off Bernard Hopkins.
Yeah, well, I think everybody writes him off every time. I think he needs to put pants on when he's doing the speedball, though. Have you seen the pictures of that?
No.
No, it was a couple of weeks ago, Bernard Hopkins posting pictures of himself on Twitter, butt naked in a pair of flip flops doing the speedball. What the hell are you posting stuff like this for? I'm sure it was a magazine shoot. I can't quite remember. I will go out against the grain on this one. I see Hopkins beating him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see Hopkins using every strength that Kovalev has against him. And
I don't know. It's just, I think for Kovalev, you know, this is going to be a shot at the big time too. You know, I know that he fought Nathan Cleverley, and sort of that was sort of his step onto the world map. But you know, I think with this fight, you know, he's going in against a 49-year-old man, and you know, Hopkins can call himself the alien all he wants, but you know, it's his body will age, and he's going in against somebody who just is, you know, technically sound and just has a punch that could just knock out a horse.
Yeah.
So you know, it's. But fair play to him, you know, he just seems to put it out of the bag every time. You know, his last couple of fights, you know, it was one against Shumanov, and before that was a guy, what was his name again? Cleverley fought him. Can you remember?
When did Cleverley fight him?
No, I'm talking about, forget about it. No, I'm just, his last run of fights happens, you know, haven't been against, you know, opponents that have been, you know, have had the punch of Kovalev. So I think, you know, he's been able to, you know, he's been able to get away with it for his last few fights, but this one here, it's probably the most dangerous fight he could take.
Yeah, I mean,
Bernard, so you have to give him his juice for that.
There you go, mate. Bernard Hopkins' last run of opponents have been Shumanov, Kara Murat.
That's it.
Travis Cloud, then he had the loss and the no contest with Dawson. Jean Pascal, the win and the draw. Roy Jones. Enrique Ornelas, Kelly Pavlik, and then Calzaghe.
Yeah, so I think if you look at Cloud for a start, you know, he was, you know, he just seemed to be a bit exposed himself. And then we look at Murat, you know, he's a decent enough fighter, you know, sort of fringe world class, but, you know, he was there for the taking. And with Shumanov, you know, he had not really that court. He was decent enough skills, but you know, didn't really have the power to back it up. But with this fight, he's taken on, you know, someone that does have the power and the technique.
Yeah, I completely agree. I tell you what, I got one more thing to talk about before we finish, mate. Scott Quigg.
I was going to say about the Danny Garcia as well.
I've forgotten about that just because of what a pointless fight it was.
We'll
talk about it. It's just want to mention Scott Quigg is defending his WBA super bantamweight title against Paulus and Bunda in Manchester in September, which I'll try and get to that fight, all being well. Now, he's got a lot of stick for this fight because not many people have heard of Ambunda, which, you know, fair enough, Namibian. He moved up the division after losing his WBA. I will get the sanctioning bodies right tonight at some point. The WBO belt last year. So, you know, he is a former world champion, okay, at a lower weight, but really I don't think he makes that much difference down there. I have heard people on, again, our forum. Nobody, when they listen to the show, will ever come on our forum because of what we say about it. It's not a bad place, I promise. but nobody will, you know, they're writing this guy off because they don't know who he is. If you just take a look at his record, he's a former world champion.
Yeah.
You know, he's mixed in similar, probably better class than Quigg has. So, you know, there is always the chance that this could be a mismatch and that the step up in weight won't agree with him. Or there is that chance that Quigg could come unstuck. I just think we've seen it before. Do you remember the Over McKenzie shit card in Newcastle earlier this year when everybody wrote it off as a mismatch and there were like three or four upsets in the card? There was only me and you that called them as upsets. Do you remember the card I'm on about?
Yeah. Oh yeah, it was against
was it Dickinson?
Yeah,
it was that card, wasn't it? And everybody writes these guys off because they don't know who they are. The fact is, you don't know who they are. You don't know how good they are. Just have a quick look. He's a former world champion.
Kamenetsky as well. That was an eighth there. He beat Frank Buglione.
Yeah.
Call that one too.
Yeah. You know, that's what I don't understand. They're just, you know.
For this fight, you know, Quigg's next one, you know, I just think, you know, size is going to matter because, you know, I think I looked at the size differences and Quigg's 4 inches taller than him. You know, Quigg's massive at the weight and, you know, I could just see a possible scenario the same as Card Frampton and Hugo Cazares, you know, just where Quigg will just come forward, you know, and, you know, I haven't seen much of the game himself, but, you know, sort of just thinking, you know, these guys moving up weight and he's moving up against a massive super bantamweight with a big punch, and you know, if he goes against the ropes, but it just depends. I haven't really had time just to sit there and have a good look at it yet, but yeah, you know, it's,
I'm going to be honest, I mean, I don't recognise many people on his you know, record. That's because I don't overly follow the lower weights. However, you know, he won the WBO belt in, where am I looking, 2012, July. Defended it against Pungalang Sursingu, which won a UD. He was 43-1. He then lost it via UD in the next defence against Tomek Kamadi, who was 27-0 at the time. I'll just check his record now. If I can not keep messing things up. He's now 30-0 with 19 knockouts. Still WBO champion. He actually beat, he actually knocked out Pungalang Sursingu in Las Vegas. So, you know, these are guys that, if you, I suppose if you took the time to watch, you'd actually realize that they're probably not that bad. And obviously, I know slightly different for ourselves that because we try and catch that much boxing because of the writing we have to do, these guys do tend to go under the radar as they don't make the headlines.
Yeah.
But at the same time, people who, you know, could take the time to read it, they just don't. I think they're happy to slate it and just say it's a mismatch. When it maybe isn't.
It's sort of same again with Salinas. Whenever he fought Quigg too, you know, everybody was sort of calling that a bit of a mismatch too. And you know, Salinas just showed for the first six rounds that a jab, you know, a jab is just like the kryptonite to Scott Quigg. You know, if you have a good jab, you can keep him off. But unfortunately, Salinas showed after that that he didn't have anything else but a jab.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. The other fight on the card is Anthony Crawler against Gamelle Diaz, 38-11-2 for the WBO Intercontinental Lightweight title. Now, that is supposed to be, they're hoping to make that a world title eliminator as well. I'd like to see Anthony Crawler get his world title shot. He'd get beat, but again, he's a good, honest pro. You know, always works hard, and he was fantastic in that fight against John Murray, which I was at in April. You know, that really was, that stole the show, that fight.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was that one, and there was one on the undercard as well that involved, I can't think of his name. Let me just see if I can find it.
Wasn't Gavin Reese and thing, was it?
No, that wasn't that one.
No.
No. Oh, I can't think of his name. I spoke to him recently as well. I feel really bad. I do apologise. Let me just see if I can find him. He's on my Facebook somewhere. What's his? It's going to come to me, and it'll come to me afterwards. And if it does, I'll post it on Twitter. But yeah, that was a cracking fight, and you know, because the main event was Scott Quigg, and he had that late replacement, and he sort of made a bit of a joke about the whole thing, and you know, it wasn't really what you wanted in the end. Do you know what I mean? But you know, you've been to fights where that happens, haven't you? Oops, excuse me.
Was it Josh Warrington and Redmond Monroe?
No. Mm. That was a good fight, though. The Josh Warrington fight was very good. You know, since become a big fan of Josh Warrington. And
Tyler Nurse and Taylor Goodjohn.
Yeah, Tyler Goodjohn. Thank you. That was a fantastic fight. It really was. You know, Tyler, I was rooting for the programme. See if it was on there. Yeah, Tyler Goodjohn and Tyron Nurse. That was a fantastic fight. And I was sat with Nate from Live Fight and Jack from Boxing Mad. And for, you know, the entirety of the fight, we didn't say a word to each other. We were just engrossed on the ring. And it was nothing to do with the ring girls. It was a fantastic fight. There was another one on the undercard, one of the younger lads. I mentioned it in the write-up with Eddie. He was superb. Trained by Bobby Rimmer. So, you know, there's a lot of talent about at the moment. But yeah, before we finish then, let's have a quick chat about Danny Garcia. As we've talked quite a lot of crap this week.
Yeah. As we do most weeks.
Yeah, as we do most weeks, let's be fair. So Danny Garcia beat Rod Salker at the weekend. Second round knockout. The left hook was back. You know, he landed the left hook about a minute before?
No, it was like about a second before. He caught him at the same.
Because I've seen a clip, but it's the two of them, so I didn't know how close it was. I haven't actually seen
it. Yeah, it was like, he went forward, hit him with the right jab, left hook, and Salga sort of staggered, and then once he staggered, he threw the exact same two-punch combination again that he caught him with about 3 seconds before, and just knocked him sparkers. Mm-hmm. Head just hit off the ground, and Natal came flying in. But yeah. As I actually spotted somebody put on Twitter, it was funny, sort of just made me laugh a bit, just says, for that fight, Danny Garcia got $750,000. That's $1 for each fan he lost after that fight. Yeah, but I think even just, I don't know, I think it's time for Danny Garcia to move up the welterweight. You know, I think even, you know, it was supposed to be beats him on Peterson, finally takes that IBF belt that Peterson shouldn't have in the first place.
Yeah.
Sort of, suppose it'll be good to see that, you know, just to see Peterson get the belt took off him. But, you know, just that card of the weekend was just, you know, it just was pointless, really.
Well, here's a tweet for you. I'm just about to retweet it, and I meant to do it earlier. Oscar De La Hoya: fans want it, fighters want it, Golden Boy Promotions wants it. Let's get moving on Garcia versus Peterson. Now, that is a fight that we all want to see. Partially because you say Lamont Peterson shouldn't be a world champion.
Yeah.
You know, unless he has the testosterone levels of a prepubescent teenage girl, he shouldn't have a world championship belt. The fact he still has that win on his ledger as well.
Yeah.
You know, just it sticks in the throat a little bit.
But I actually think it's a dangerous fight as well for Garcia too, because, you know, Peterson showed at the weekend, you know, he actually thought he fought brilliant at the weekend as well, even though it was, you know, sort of the way the fight went. But he impressed me enough the way he fought. But, you know, put him and Danny Garcia, and, you know, there's a good chance Peterson wins that fight as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. Now, I've got a question about Garcia's left hook.
Yeah.
It's not a left hook. Well, let me get that right. It is a left hook. However, he doesn't watch where it lands.
Yeah, he puts his head down.
He turns his head away, and actually, when it punches, it's more like a clothesline. Coming back to WWE.
Yeah,
again,
he was one against Khan, you know, sort of, he's like looking at his shoes, and he's just, his arm goes behind his back, and he just whips him straight round.
Yeah.
But whenever it lands, it's just, it's unbelievable, sadly. Even though Salga was sort of a bit of a no-hoper, you know, at the weekend, but it was one for his knockout reel on YouTube, you know, when he retired.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. But I'll tell you what, we'll end the show there this week. Now, we were meant to have a guest this week, Ocean Fagan.
Yeah, he's on holiday, but he was actually going to come on last week when he was on holiday. Celtic were playing, and Celtic somehow managed to, you know.
I know, that was a cracking game, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, so somehow he got beat, but yet the mysterious score of a 3-0 win, whatever, I don't know. But I was joking with him on Facebook about it, so. And he said, we're sitting actually chatting away to him just about football and stuff as well. But he said he's happy enough, and he gave me his number, and he said he's happy enough to come on. He has a few tales about his fights with Chavez Jr. and Khan, and just he says that he has plenty of stories about his days in the sport.
Yeah. Well, I was just about to say that if you don't know who Fagan is, obviously go and watch his fight with Amir Khan. It was the comeback following the Prescott defeat.
You actually go and watch his fight against Chavez Jr.
Yeah.
And you'll just see that he actually got robbed against Chavez Jr. Because he actually did show Chavez Jr. up that night, but because of who Chavez was, and he was travelling to fight him, and yeah, it actually was an old school robbery.
We'll obviously talk about the Brook fight next week. Do you know what, we might even try and get some competitions going and see what we can do. But you know, if you enjoy the show, then tell other people about it and spread the word. We are on Facebook, just search for V2 Boxing. We're on Twitter at V2 Boxing as well, and you can follow myself on Twitter at Paul H V2, and Damien is at The Boxing Freak. But apart from that, then that is it's goodbye from me, goodbye from him,
goodbye
from us all.